Yeah, indeed, these weevils are also horny, both with the horns they possess and their behavior, which is like most weevils. So I'll be talking about the Berardini today. I'll be talking about the Berardini today. Just go through the introduction, some biology about them, why they're important, phylogeny that I did. And then into the character evolution, specifically the horns. So Carcharhinoidea is about 7 families, although that's pretty widely disputed. It's varied tremendously depending on the author, and there's still a fair amount of discrepancy today. The true weevils, the Carcharhinoidae, comprise about 10 subfamilies. Of course, that varies pretty widely today, and there are very few phylogenetic hypotheses that have been done for the family. And because we can't really define the subfamilies very well, few phylogenetic studies have been done below the family level. So the Berardini is a fairly large group, about 550 genera, although a lot of these probably should be synonymized. And there's a lot of species. It's primarily a neotropic group, and it's defined pretty much by homoplasies, which is not very strange when considering a relatively large amount of taxa in your sampling. And it's currently comprised of 9 tribes. So, like all fairly large insect groups, there's a good amount of diversity in Berardini. You get really colorful ones, some metallic ones, and very, of course, the horns in some of them. Strange morphologies on the pronotum. You also get ones with various types of scales covering the derm, including very pointy ones. And so they're important because they feed, well, like most weevils, pretty much on all plant parts. However, Berardines tend to specialize on roots, stems, and leaves, although you'll find them other places on the plants. They are pests on ornamentals, and they constitute a lot of pests intercepted at ports, which most people cannot really identify except a few weevil systematists. And they've been used as biological control agents. So, my main research question was, so what is the structure of this subfamily, as no hypothesis exists to date? And then we'll take a look at the evolution of these characters, the horns. So the taxon sampling was 301 exemplar species, about 280 Berardine species, and 29 outgroups. I wanted to get a good sampling of outgroups because it's just not known what the sister groups are, really. And this is a morphological study. Okay, basically TNT. I did use Nona, but I could not find the most parsimonious tree using that. Since it's a fairly large data set, so I went with TNT. And here's the phylogeny. I guess you can come out with a monophyletic Berardini. And there's various groups defined within it. I tentatively define some paraphyletic groups which may represent good groupings if future studies are conducted. Of course, there's low bootstrap jackknife values for all clades. That's no big surprise with the number of taxa. And everything's pretty much homoplasious. But again, when including a lot of taxa in your analyses, such as these, you will see that you often have kind of grades at the base of your groups. And if you look at a lot of phylogenies done today with few taxon, with the low taxon sampling, you often have pretty well-defined synapomorphies for clades, which is not the case if you continually sample more and more taxa. That's just the reality of biology. So with this tree, I wanted to examine horn evolution. So basically look at homology of horns. since they're present in a number of genera, look at some associated behaviors and structures and see if there's any patterns that show up. So this is the horns mapped onto the tree. They were included, of course, as characters in the analysis. And there's basically kind of five types, morphological types. They look like they may have been homologous from the start, but they obviously are not. As you can see, the different colors showing up multiple times throughout the tree. Oh, and they also are present in an adjacent subfamily, Conodorini. So a little bit of morphology of horns. They have this horn sheath, which is deep invagination, and anterior to posterior invagination inside the prothorax, right, as you can see here. Okay, it varies in size, and it can also be bifurcate. Not all taxa possess this invagination. So basically, the five kind of morphological types that you will see are this. Type one, where you have long horns, okay, and then you have a reduced or absent horn sheath, so there's no invagination on the prosternum between the horns. This type two, you have, again, long developed horns, but then there's a deep horn sheath located in between the horns. This type three, you have very short horns, and this does not matter, it does not matter how really large the specimen is. They're always this size. And there's no horn sheath present in this type. Type four, you have long horns again, and a bifurcate horn sheath. And this type five, actually the two horns, they're long, but they're fused. So you have this just one horn sticking out. And it's kind of hard to have a horn sheath in this case. So there isn't one. And of course, there's still more horn types that I haven't looked at. I've looked at many more since the phylogeny was done, and these weren't included in the analysis, but you can have these long horns that are compressed laterally. You can have ones that there's actually two horn sheaths, one at the base of each horn. There's ones that are kind of elevated on these little shelves on the prosternum, and like here. So there's many, many more types. And these are associated with a behavior. So in typical beetles, you have horns that are present on the pronotum or extended from the mandibles, and they're used in male-to-male competition usually, in which the males fight and usually lift one another, try to throw them off of a substrate. But in weevils, you have an atypical use of these horns. It's for male-to-male competition, but this is what happens. So when you have a male and a female that are about to mate, copulating, or are about to copulate, there will be maybe another male that comes up upon them and pushes the male away with its rostrum. Then the males will start to stridulate a lot, okay, with the plectra present on the tergite and a file on the inside of the elytra. So they start producing a lot of sound, okay. This is aggressive sound, obviously. And if one of them does not go away from all this sound production, then they will start in this fighting behavior, which can be thought of as like a jousting, or in this case, it's pushing. It's like a little miniature sumo match. So this is what happens. And this has only been observed in one species, actually, that has this long horn sheath and long horns. So the behavior in the rest of them is not known. Okay, so what happens is they will go face to face, okay? There's a lateral view and a dorsal view of what happens. And what they do is they lock one of their horns into the opponent's horn sheath. Okay, they do not flip one another over, it's just they're merely pushing. Okay. And in order to do this, you kind of have to tilt your body at a certain angle in order to get the horn into the opponent's horn sheath. It's a very strange behavior. And what I've found is that in some genera, horns may break. I've often found many horns in some genera that have broken off, particularly, and they're all on the right side. What's interesting is that, so this could be, maybe is it because it's a really aggressive behavior? Well, it doesn't really appear to be so. So I don't think they're fighting so aggressively that they may break off a horn. That's possible. But I've also observed there's a strong constriction at the base of the horn on the right side. So I thought maybe this could be a developmental innovation, like in some lizards or skinks where their tails may break off when a predator bites it. What if their horns get stuck in the horn sheath? Maybe they can just break it off, dislodge it. I don't know. It's an interesting thought. So these are the stridulatory structures that are present on the tergites here. And okay, plectra. And then there's a corresponding file on the inner side of the elytra. There's two types of files. There's this one with sparse ridges and a dense ridge type. Okay, and then I've actually done some stridulation recording of some Berrydines in Kansas. And this is kind of an aggressive sound that they produce. It's from me squeezing them between my fingers. And so here's another one. Let's see if the sound works. Oops. Oh, never mind. It's only up here, so. It's just a little clicking sound, or like a chirping sound. This is another recording. This is of actually them mating, and there's very distinct pulses of when they're copulating. And there's some really strange behaviors associated with the mating. And this sound is basically produced within the human range of hearing. There's very little ultrasound. And this is actually the evolution of stridulatory structures. They've evolved multiple times throughout weevils, actually. So it's no surprise that they have been gained and lost several times within the subfamily. I'm way over. Okay, let me show you something real quick. There's a correlation between stridulation also and horn presence. Really quickly, I found some fossils from the Green River Formation that are approximately 48 million years old, and I found them with horns right here. So see, there's horns present. So these horns are at least 48 million years old. And this behavior may also be that old, but these appear to be of maybe the type 1 where there's no horn sheath, although I can't be that confident. And then, okay, this is the last thing I promise. The horns, actually, if you examine them biogeographically, they appear restricted to the New World. So no Old World taxa seem to possess them. And those taxa that are distributed worldwide, only the New World members of those genera possess horns. So this may be an interesting phenomenon. I don't know why this may be the case, but it could be an actual pattern. And so then you start to think about, you know, why have horns developed, which I could, we could talk about later if you're interested. And so what? Well, I'll leave that to you to decide. It's pretty interesting, I think. Okay, thank you.